Hi, this is a lecture on W.E.B. Du Bois and basically just on the concept of double consciousness. I do think it's a complicated concept because it has these multiple dimensions, and I've reread this essay many times and I think I understand it, but I still always have this sense that there are multiple things going on at once, and so that what's being presented is perhaps more complicated than at first glance. So I want to try and go over what I see is maybe like four different dimensions of double consciousness as Du Bois presents it. And then I want to identify some of the goals that Du Bois points towards as, you know, improvements or solutions, or at least directions for better development, basically for the Black American community. And then I want to end up by, basically, I guess I'll list off a number of possible questions for discussion, but I'll try and fill out why I think those questions are interesting. You know, one of the major things to have in mind as I go through this, one of the major questions, is whether you think double consciousness is a phenomenon restricted in the United States to African American people, or whether such a phenomenon must also happen for all variety of racialized people, I mean, maybe to women too. Is there such a thing as a double consciousness for Mexican Americans? The phenomenon that I am about to describe here, I would like you to ask, you know, does this apply to other categories of people? And do you have an experience of something like what Du Bois is describing? So Du Bois is, you know, one of the most celebrated African-American writers, activists, speakers, philosophers, one of the most celebrated African-American men. He was born in, I think, 1868. At least one side of his family had been long-term free Black folk in Massachusetts. So he came from something of a privileged background, or at least a background which was not as subject to suppression as if he had been born in the South. He went to Fisk University, which was an all-Black school in Tennessee. Came out, became a teacher, and then he becomes a very recognized advocate for the improvement of the condition of so-called Negroes in the United States. This is the first chapter of the book, The Souls of Black Folk, which is from 1903, and it's a reprint of an essay that was written some years before that. This idea of double consciousness that he introduces in this essay, it becomes really important in, I guess, the history of Black radical thought. So it shows up later with Paul Gilroy, with Franz Fanon, with Stokely Carmichael, who changed his name to Kwame Ture. It's a rich concept that a whole lot of critical thinkers have recognized as descriptive, maybe as true, and of, you know, in need of or worthy of continued exploration. Du Bois, after this, goes on to, he's sort of deeply involved in the Harlem Renaissance. He is involved with the NAACP. And through the course of his life, he moves, as I understand it, kind of further and further left. Although, you know, by the end of his life, Stalin was in power. He was somewhat dubious about Stalin, but he did hold on to the idea that in the background, the real problem that supports racialized America is capitalism. And he held on to the idea also that communism, as the radical overthrow of capitalist relations, you know, the seizure of private property, the making public of private property, the making illegal of manufacturing for profit purposes, and so on, he had the idea that this may well be the solution. So he becomes a more and more radical individual. For certain classes of individual, oppressed and historically oppressed classes, values come from the outside, and though they are often internalized and people understand and craft themselves along the lines that have been set out for them by their masters, this is not clearly in their own best self-interest. So the ongoing question in this class is whether certain values ought to be accepted, rejected, or reinterpreted from these different perspectives. I really want to start asking whether the situation, the manner of experience that, for example, Du Bois describes here and then that C.L.R. James will describe, whether this manner of experience and the sorts of basic passions and attitudes it produces might not be true, might not be real for any number of people extending beyond the original population that Du Bois is talking about. Might it not be that a whole lot of people experience double consciousness and a sort of alienation of their identity from themselves? Or when C.L.R. James suggests that the basic experience of Black folks and women are educational, instructive, because they show in harsher relief something that is true for most other people. So when he talks about, you know, the frustration and anger and violence that emerges as the result of suppressed ambitions and brutalized identity, I would like to think about whether that kind of experience might not, across time, be distributed more and more broadly across American civilization. Now, if that's the case, what I'm describing is something quite dark, because I'm suggesting the opposite of a progress narrative. The progress narrative would say, okay, so we abolished slavery in 1863, the war was over in 1865, Black people could vote in 1870 or the early 1870s. Unfortunately, there was Jim Crow, there were some growing pains there. We kind of screwed up and forgot about stuff for another 80 years, but then we got civil rights legislation, desegregation in the 1950s as federal mandates, and then we had the civil rights movement in the 1960s, which realized what the federal government had previously only put on paper. And since then, it's really been more and more freedom and happiness and self-realization and success for everybody. That's the progress narrative, right? You ought to be familiar with it. It's what you're supposed to think. But what if, instead of that being the case, the experience of oppressed peoples have been increasingly generalized, so that the sense that, for example, yeah, you don't really need education. You know, you might need a degree, but you don't need broad education. You don't really need to know, like, the history of philosophy or like, you know, like the general truths of science, or, you know, the basic contours of history. These are, you know, basic things about knowing your world, being a learned person, or to put it in Du Bois' somewhat antiquated terms, you know, achieving book learning. Du Bois says that, you know, a whole lot of Black folk just started to think, well, who needs book learning when we're just stuck being cooks and cleaners and servants anyhow? We don't need to learn if we're just going to be servants, and we're just going to be servants. So whatever. What if that attitude, which is bred from an atmosphere of no opportunity, what if that's actually been disseminated to the general population? Now, I know you all are in school and you're getting a quote unquote education, but in my experience, a whole lot of you are, you know, this is a very pragmatic undertaking for a whole lot of people. And I'm not saying you're not smart. I'm not talking about capacity. I'm talking about value structures. It seems to me that the vast majority of the students that I have are after a piece of paper, because that piece of paper will get them better jobs. It's a completely pragmatic endeavor. Well, maybe this means that people have thrown away the idea that there's any value in learning for itself, because, okay, maybe you're going to be white-collar labor. Maybe you're going to be management or middle management. But there's no use in just, like, you know, learning what the world is, because you're going to have to serve for the rest of your life. You're just going to have to do what the boss says, do what the corporation needs. What's the fucking point of knowing history, etc.? I mean, my general question is just, might it be the case that the kinds of things we're looking at this week become increasingly true for the general population? And that maybe this is one of the reasons it's of value to look at the special experiences, specific experiences of Black folks and of women. Middle-class women, specifically, is what C.L.R. James looks at. Now let's move on and just deal with the concept. The concept is called double consciousness. And it's laid out in one or two paragraphs pretty quickly, but I feel like in those paragraphs, there's so much that is hit on. So when I look at this, I break it down into parts. And I say, okay, like there's a number of approaches to defining what double consciousness is here. The way that Du Bois speaks, it sounds as if he were just clarifying one single concept, as if each time he added a new phrasing, he was just trying to clarify this one thing. But I really think that this is not the case. I think instead what he's doing is suggesting that double consciousness has multiple meanings and that all these meanings, all these varieties of experience are effectively folded together. So here's my analysis. Number one, when he talks about double consciousness, he is saying that there exists in the United States not one world, but two worlds. And he describes sort of becoming aware of these worlds, right? So children don't know that there is a so-called color line. Color line is one of the phrases that Du Bois coined. Not aware that there's a color line until at some point, he was going to school, and of course he's in Massachusetts, and it's Valentine's Day, and everybody's giving Valentines to one another, but one white girl won't give him one. And he starts to realize, oh shit, I'm different. I'm being treated differently. I must be different. What is this difference? The difference is this, like in terms of domains of experience, there's on the one hand, the black world, and on the other hand, the white world. And basically, all opportunity, all light, all freedom of movement is to be found in the white world. It's been sequestered over there. It's been hidden over there. It's been stolen and placed over there. And he talks about there being a separation between these worlds. Not always apparent, but it presents itself once in a while. And this separation, he uses two different terms. He talks about the veil, and he talks about the shadow. So you can think of even these terms are actually, I think, kind of sophisticated here, because on the one hand, the veil refers to a dividing reality. It's like a line, a fence. It's a separation between this one world and the other. And it might look like black folks can, if like Du Bois, they're exceptionally intelligent, hardworking, and so on. Oh, and by the way, this is something that sort of bothers me about Du Bois. Du Bois seems to me to have internalized a whole lot of the basic American values. So, for example, he constantly criticizes the rural folk in Tennessee that he met through his early teaching experience. He criticizes them for being lazy and slovenly, you know, and then once in a while, if he praises somebody, he praises them for their thrift and their hard work. You know, these are the typical Puritan values that he would have received as a child in Massachusetts. Anyway, so the veil is a separator between these two worlds. It only appears once in a while. It might look like for a moment, especially to a child, that they can go and achieve whatever it is they want. But then they start moving towards that goal and something stops them. The veil appears, right? And what stops them is the way that they are treated by non-black folk, by white folk. But then the veil and the shadow also describe sort of the conditions of the black world. So he talks about like living under a veil or under a shadow. He speaks as if like all light were over there in the other world. And I think what he means is it's hard to move. It's hard to think. It's hard to advance. It's hard to achieve tasks under the veil, because there's so much limitation. And the limitation, this is what's important about this concept of double consciousness. The limitation is not just external. It's not just social. It's not just that black folks are not allowed into certain restaurants or certain jobs or whatever. It becomes also internal and psychological. Okay, so let's call this dimension two of double consciousness. I would call this one, you know, double consciousness is related to externally imposed identity. And identity is an internal, if you accept those terms, it's a psychological reality. So external forces produce a psychological reality, not for everybody, and certainly not for everybody equally, but only for certain sectors of the population. So the basic phenomenon that happens here is that the young black kid, for example, doesn't think about being black. He's just a kid. But once he runs into enough social settings, which are structured, which are dominated by white folk, and so on, he starts to experience himself in a different way. And so the difference here is that there's just the being of the individual, let's say the being of the child for now, who experiences himself, you know, as a body with desires and playfulness and certain curiosity and certain interests. And as he grows, you know, like certain larger scale and social and eventually economic desires, that's the being of the person. And that could hypothetically be sufficient for the establishment of an identity. You know, I'm the sort of person who is prone to reading. I'm the sort of person who really likes to work with his hands, etc. You can start to form the elements of identity out of just a personal experience. But in the phenomenon of double consciousness, that's not the only source of identity. There's another source, and that source is the way in which, especially white society, but I think if we looked at this closely, it would actually be black society on occasion and in various ways also, where the identity, to use the contemporary language of Du Bois, the identity of being Negro, of being black, that is imposed from outside. And of course, in this racist society, in this white supremacist society, there are all kinds of pejorative things that go along with being Negro. Maybe more animalistic, maybe more sexual, maybe more prone to dance and to move to music, maybe more lazy, maybe more stupid, maybe less capable of progress in history. This is a long list of negative stereotypes. And the point is not just that they exist, it's that an individual person, in trying to live through the world, has this hodgepodge of identity enforced upon him or her. So the consequence, and I think the notion here is that this is not the case for the upper class. It's not the case for the white man of some means. I imagine in different ways it becomes more the case as we move towards poverty. The idea of hillbillies and rednecks, as they're all the same things we just listed off for Negroes, right? Or at least some of them. They're stupider, they're more backwards, they're slovenly, they're lazy. So there are these sort of pejorative, externally imposed identities coming from the top of this power structure in many different ways. So now the person who suffers this experience has basically two identities which are colliding with one another and mixing with one another and competing with one another. There's just their own experience of themselves and their feelings and their tendencies and their fears. But then on the other hand, there is this category that they are constantly pushed into. Now, Du Bois does not here discuss the potential consequences of this, aside from general sadness and bitterness and anger. But I suppose you could go on and suggest that psychologically this is going to produce further effects. People may well run away from the identity. How do you do that? You got to act more white, right? You try to not be the thing that they say that you are. Or perhaps there are instances where an over-identification occurs, where like, okay, they want me to be that. Fuck them. I'm going to be that. Like, oh yeah, black people are more violent. I'll fucking show you violent. Now, these are both possible consequences of this psychological reality, but it is a psychological reality which is produced by an external social and material phenomenon. At the most basic level, double consciousness is produced the moment that white people look at black people. Or rather, maybe this doesn't happen to a one-year-old or a two-year-old, but the moment that the black person recognizes that he or she is being seen as a black person, all of a sudden, this external identity invades the psychology. Perhaps it can be warded off, perhaps it can't. But now there's a struggle, an individual and psychological, emotional and behavioral struggle, which has to be undergone by certain sectors of the population, but not by others. And by the way, like, you know, part of the description that I'm giving here might sound like it goes a little bit beyond Du Bois. That's because I'm familiar with Frantz Fanon's book, Black Skin, White Masks. And he has a famous chapter in that book, written, I suppose, 1949, 1950, something like that. He has a long chapter there, famous chapter, in which he describes this experience of being constructed as a Negro in France. I think it's when he's waiting in line for a movie, and he's like watching this child see him as something that he never had any idea that he was. Okay. Dimension number three of double consciousness. Maybe title this one, Two Warring Ideals, which is the language Du Bois uses. This is about having two identities that don't match again, but it's not exactly the same as the identities we just looked at. The identities we just looked at, they're specific and they're individually related. You know, so a person can be just who they are, which is like a set of tendencies and preferences and experiences and memories, versus being reduced to this kind of stereotypical category. Here, the distinction is between something more general and something less general. The black person in America is both an American and a Negro. Now, you could link this up with more contemporary analyses of race, which suggest that, you know, whiteness we consider to be like an ethnicity, but really historically whiteness is constructed as the absence of ethnicity, right? So I'm a white guy. I get to be an American, although I'm not so particularly psyched about it. I get to be an American, but like my Americanness is not substantially challenged by my being specifically a white American. But this is not the case for the clash of American identity and Negro identity. Why? Because to be an American means many things, right? It means to have like a certain set of rights. It means to be identified with progress. It means to be identified with modernity. It means to be identified with innovation, blah, blah, blah. It means to have certain opportunities. And yet, especially in 1903, but we know in various ways still in the present, these possibilities corresponding, or these rights corresponding to American identity, are actually not extended to the black population, or they are extended only in these mitigated, watered down, or, you know, patently false ways. So two warring ideals, meaning two different things that you can think of yourself as. On the one hand, you think of yourself as American because, hey, you are. You know, as C.L.R. James puts it, you know, like black Americans are American all the way down, although different writers in the same tradition might emphasize more the sustaining of African traditions. But James doesn't in that book anyway. He says, you know, they share a culture with white folks, or at least some portion of it. They share language. They share a religion. They share many things. So they, you know, black folks are Americans, clearly, but not only, and therefore not quite. This is the claim. Because insofar as a person must also recognize themselves as Negro, and this is the question, right? Like, we're really in the land of psychology, and in a lot of ways, the land of psychoanalysis. You can link all this stuff up with Freud if you want, although Freud writes it well later than Du Bois does. You know, internally, when I want to understand what I am, I have a sort of picture of myself. There's a picture of what I ought to be. This is called the ego ideal. So what he's talking about here is basically two different ego ideals. You know, who am I and who am I supposed to be? Oh, I'm an American. Oh, wait, no, I'm black. And these two things are in tension with one another and at odds with one another, because one signifies opportunity and inclusion and rights, and the other one signifies the lack of opportunity and exclusion and the denial of rights. Okay, and then lastly, there's a sort of social dimension to double consciousness, and I would call this one double or split aims. And I think in a lot of ways, he's reflecting on his own experience, right? Because he's real smart, comes from a somewhat privileged situation as far as being an African-American in 1903 is concerned anyway, or the late 1800s, and he's an intellectual. He wants to get ahead. He wants to be recognized. He's a real smart dude. He wants to be recognized as a real smart dude. So on the one hand, there's this drive, especially in being a suppressed person and being a belittled person. There's this sort of passion, which is nurtured even by that suppression, to prove yourself. And so you can go out in the broader white world and you can try to show that you're every bit as good as the white folks, and maybe even better. And maybe once in a while you can succeed there. Maybe you can get yourself higher in academia than anybody else had gone. And Du Bois is among this group of some of the earliest highly educated African Americans. Maybe you can generate knowledge. You know, maybe you can write books, as Du Bois does. And maybe these books are going to be generally recognized as, like, you know, high quality. So there are all these goals that a person might rationally and passionately pursue, especially because they start out in a subjected position and start out battling with these expectations and insistences of the surrounding society about their deficiency. But there's also another draw, there's another pull, there's another set of goals that really ought to be pursued too for a very able black man or woman. And those are obligations towards the black community itself. But what you have to do right by your black community is in many ways totally at odds with what you have to do to be recognized and advanced within the white world. So if you get advanced within the white world, then this relates to probably making yourself useful to corporate America in 1903, making yourself useful to, the Carnegie Corporation, etc. But what the black community needs is not a capacity to do accounting or spreadsheets or real estate law or any of the many things that large-scale business concerns require. That's not what's needed at home. What's needed at home is very basic stuff. People need doctors. People need help to get their plumbing working. People need very basic things. I think Du Bois is reflecting on his own experience. There's this fundamental split in terms of like, well, what the fuck should I do? I'm so able. If I go over in this direction, I might achieve a certain degree of recognition which will mitigate my subjugation as somebody tagged with this pejorative term, Negro. But on the other hand, then I'm abandoning my community. But if I go do what my community needs, then I'm never going to overcome this idea that I'm backwards and sort of unimportant because I'm only going to be doing menial tasks. Think also about production of knowledge, the production of books in this case. So Du Bois writes all these books, and they're super influential. And they do, to make things feel a little better, I suppose, they do end up contributing to a very important black radical tradition. So lots of black folks do eventually read Du Bois, but not most black folks in his day. The kind of writing that he does can't be read, can't be understood by the majority of the population from which he hails. Imagine you go and you do your master's degree in, I don't know, marine biology. And then you go back to a poor urban community and you start telling them about the terms that you know. They're gonna be like, what the fuck are you talking about, man? I don't even know what those words mean. There's a splitting of aims, and Du Bois says a weakening, a consequent weakening, because you can't focus. In order to do the right thing, you have to excel in the white world and show them that they're all wrong about black folks. But also, in order to do the right thing, you got to stay in the black community and do what they need, which will allow the white folks to be like, see, you're just kind of a trivial being. In order to develop yourself, which is a right everybody has, and maybe a project everybody ought to be involved in, even though sadly most of us are not, to develop yourself, you should pursue learning and knowledge and understanding as far as you possibly can. But if you do that, you will then only be able to speak to other educated folks, most of whom are going to be white. And so you will have alienated yourself from your community. And so you can sort of go back and forth between these and try and split the difference. But the overall cumulative effect of that will be to super reduce the amount of energy and hence the amount of forward movement that are possible in either dimension. You got to operate in both the white world and the black world. And this splits your power probably into less than half. Okay, so this is my reading of like what double consciousness means. The claim is that black folks in America experience the world in a very specific way as a consequence of their segregation, of their poverty, and of the racial identity which is imposed upon them. This is the claim, and it extends across all these different dimensions. Now, let's move on to the goals that Du Bois mentions in this writing. He says at one point that what black folks really need is to move towards attaining self-conscious manhood, or another one, merging the double self into a better or truer self. Another one, developing personal powers. And then the one that I think is most interesting, he has the goal of awakening a common black consciousness, or producing the possibility for black communities to think thoughts together. So I guess my question there is just, I mean, I don't know that I need to comment much more on this. I think these can all just be sort of translated into questions. Are these valid goals? Are they real goals? Are they your goals? Is there meaning in saying typical representatives of a certain community ought to be moving towards a greater self-consciousness? You know, they ought to understand themselves better. They ought to understand their communities better. They ought to understand the economic structure better. They ought to understand this racialized structure better. They ought to start to recognize their own capacity for thought and understanding and, you know, augment those things. Is it possible to get past double consciousness? Because he seems to be announcing that as a goal. What would developing one's personal powers on the broadest possible level, what would that really mean? What would it mean to develop a common consciousness within Black communities, or by extension, within the Chicano community, or within the Asian American community, or within the Native American community, or within the gay community? What does common consciousness mean? And what does generating common consciousness mean? And how would this be expressed? What are the key thoughts that certain communities need to think together? Okay, so I just turned those goals into questions. Just let me throw in some more questions and I'll be done. Here's a question about education. Du Bois says there's kind of sad story that comes out of the Civil War, which is that, you know, through the whole period of slavery, there was one basic goal of every Black person enslaved in the U.S., and that was to achieve emancipation. And freedom was going to deliver everything. Freedom happens, and it's not immediately gratifying. It doesn't immediately change circumstances in a great way. Technically, people are no longer owned. That's progress. But they are, in most cases, still living in the same place. They become serfs on the land where once they were slaves. They are still subject to the terror of the KKK. Okay, 1870, early 1870s, the right to vote appears, but this is fairly quickly squashed. And then by, you know, the late 1800s and the early 1900s, around the time that Du Bois is writing, Du Bois says, you know, a new goal has appeared for African American people. And I think this is probably true for Chicano people, for different racialized lower class groups. Typically lower class, poorer populations, for example, around Los Angeles, there's this idea that, okay, book learning, to use an antiquated phrase, the one that Du Bois uses, education is going to lift you. That's where your hope lies. Now, I'm sure a whole bunch of you have heard this for a long time. So the question then becomes, well, does it? Does education actually elevate you? Does education actually erase or alter the conditions of things like double consciousness, or not?